Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Today's guest is former Philly shortstop Kevin Stocker, who is currently an analyst on the Phillies radio broadcast. But before we talk to Kevin, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now, let's get to the conversation with former Philly shortstop and current Philadelphia Phillies radio analyst, Kevin Stocker. Well, Kevin Stocker is a man for all networks. I worked with him on Pac-12 Network broadcast, and he also works for CBS Sports Network and the Philadelphia Phillies radio network. And that's why we have him here to talk about the Phillies as they are hosting the Giants here for a series that starts on Monday. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us. How much fun are you having covering the Phillies, doing road games on the radio?
Oh man, it's been great. Now, I'll be honest with you, I opened the first series the first week because they hired three of us to do the road games. So we split all the trips up. So, you know, I've had a good week. I went down there for spring training, got to know the guys, and then opened up with a crazy first week when we were in Atlanta and New York and had a game snowed out. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun. It's been great to get to know the guys.
Well, Gabe Kapler is the new manager, and I know he received a lot of criticism early on, but he seems to maybe be settling in, sort of learning, you know, the different nuances of being a major league manager. You know, how open do you think he was to try to, you know, kind of go along with a little bit of the traffic? I mean, I know he had a game plan, and people talked about how he was going to follow analytics quite a bit. What have you noticed about him?
Well, you know, we knew as broadcasters, being down in spring training, that things were going to be different. I mean, we saw in spring training when he was swapping outfielders and he had guys that were regularly like second baseman or left fielders playing different positions because he likes to move guys around a lot. So we knew things were going to be different when that first weekend we opened up in Atlanta and, you know, he pulled Nola after, you know, 80 pitches or 70 pitches, whatever it was. And he did some odd things. You know how the Philly fans are, right? So they attack right away. And that's kind of what happened with Gabe. Unfortunately, when you're in Philadelphia, sometimes you don't get more than three or four games to kind of prove yourself. But I will say this, I think with Gabe, one thing about Gabe is he is a great communicator. Even with us as the broadcasters, the players, they know where they stand. And I think he's pretty honest and true to his word. So, you know, after that first trip, I think he did a good job when he went back home on taking the booze the opening day, making a few adjustments. I know he had some conversations with some of the guys and the guys in the team, like Pat Neshek, and those guys were really honest with him. And I think he did make some adjustments. And I think one of those things that he made was, I think he realized that there's a point where you have to use your eyes and trust your instincts. It's not like Gabe didn't play in the big leagues. He played, I think, for 12 years. So he has some instincts in the game. It can't be all analytics, right? There has to be a little bit more than that. So I think he's done well at taking the heat from the Philly fans because you have to have thick skin when you're there. He made some adjustments, and I think he's doing just fine.
You know, I read a story about how Pat Neshek sat down with him. I don't know if they were, you know, having some beers or whatever it was, and told him about the instinct part that you're talking about. And I don't know how unusual that is. I mean, you think about some old school managers, you know, some of the guys that you played for, Kevin, that it was my way or the highway. They wouldn't be listening to another player, but it sounds like, you know, at least he was open to listening to what Neshek had to say.
Well, yeah, that's what you want to do with your veteran guys. You know, when you talk about some of the managers I played, the one that I had that sticks out was Jim Fregosi, who was my first manager in Philadelphia. And he had a very veteran-laden team in 93. And I was the youngest by far and had a lot of older guys. So what Jim would do, though, Jim was really good at handling the press, and he kind kind of let the guys run the team somewhat. But he was very open to, you know, Darren Dalton would go in, or maybe John Kruk might go in, and they would have that conversation. And it wasn't like, you know, I don't know the whole conversation if Pat went in and had a conversation with Gabe, but that's what you would expect from your veteran guys, is to go in and just maybe, I don't know, it might have been something like, hey, how you doing? I'm a player. What can I? Do you have any questions for me? And it was just kind of back and forth. I don't think it was anything like a player going in and saying, hey, man, you need to do it this way. You know, I don't. That doesn't really happen. I think that's pretty rare. That's not going to be Pat's style. But, you know, the fact that he's got that open door policy after the first week or the first three games, I think is important, especially when it's your veteran guys. So, yeah, Fugosi was one of those guys. You know, the guys would go in there and they'd hold court a little bit. But in the long run, Jim would always make those decisions. And I think Gabe will be the same way. You know, I played for Terry Francona when he had his first year managing in Philadelphia. And he was young. I mean, he was, you know, early 40s. And I can remember one particular game where he had come out to pull Schilling out late in the game. And remember now, Terry was a rookie manager. He came out to pull him out. And Kurt looks at him like, what are you doing out here? Yeah, I'm not coming out of this game. You know, Kurt kind of talks his way into staying in the game. And sure enough, Kurt gave it up late in the game. And I think that was a good learning experience for Terry, where at some point, this is my team, right? So when Terry went to Boston and he had Schilling there, that didn't happen again. I think Terry understood, like, at some point, I got to make the decisions. Players aren't going to always be happy, but that's how it's going to be.
You mentioned moving some players around, and it's been really interesting with Scott Kingery, because here's this guy who's a rookie, you know, he got a contract and everything, and you figure that, you know, he's an infielder, and next thing you know, he's out in the outfield, and from what I've heard, he's done a pretty good job of moving around, but that's got to be difficult for a rookie. He's trying to settle in. You know, I don't know how much that affects his offense.
Well, that's baseball now, I think, in the big leagues. I think now there's this big trend about having guys being able and being open to playing other positions. Hey, there's no qualms about it here. Scott Kingery is a second baseman. That's what he's an infielder. He came up to the minor leagues as an infielder. You know what? When he went to spring training this year, he really forced the Phillies' hand. I mean, he had such a good spring, the way he was swinging the bat. It was unbelievable. Everything off his bat was hard. He was just cranking. So they had to make that decision. I think with him, being with Scott, he was very open in college when he was at Arizona. His first 2 years, he played outfield. So he had a little bit of that background and experience. And again, being an open communicator, Gabe called him in and said, would you be willing to do this? So I do think one of the challenges for Scott, there's a couple. One is when you are playing, naturally you're second base and then you go play third or you go to the other side of the field. One of the most difficult things to do is to understand where you're supposed to be when the play is going on. Cutoffs, your relays, your bunt plays, a guy stealing base. Those are the hardest things. Fielding a ground ball and throwing it, not going to be a problem for Scott. But it's those peripheral things, same with the outfield. And that's going to be a learning curve for him. And then hitting-wise, it can be tough, but, you know, he's been in almost every game. He's played, I think, in 29 or 30 games. So he's getting a lot of playing time, but he's also going through a little bit of a slump right now with a lot of strikeouts. Pitchers are starting to figure him out. But Scott Kingery is a stud. Don't get me wrong. He's what Dave Kapler calls him, a dude. I'm not quite sure what the definition of a dude is. I've never been a dude, but I think it can be somewhat challenging, but guys nowadays have to be open to playing other positions or else they may not play.
Well, there's some pretty good dudes in the major leagues that are good at that. I mean, like Chris Taylor and Ben Zobrist has done it. And in the past, you know, Jerry Hairston, Sean Figgins. I just think it's amazing because, you know, you come up playing a position and to make it to the major leagues, can you even imagine it, Kevin? I mean, you were a shortstop that all of a sudden you're out in center field and to do a good job at that position. I just think that's an amazing accomplishment to be that versatile.
Well, and I think you said it too, being versatile. I do think there's a difference between being versatile and there's a difference between being a utility guy, right?
Yeah.
So being versatile is someone who can go and play and maybe be okay at those positions until you eventually find your home, which I think he will eventually end up at second base or somewhere at second base. That's kind of where he's at. But he's very versatile and you can move him around. I don't think you're going to do that. He's not going to make a career of doing that. Being a utility guy is someone who can be just an infielder and play all three positions. There's a difference there. I think Scott Kingery will be a starter at some point. But I can't imagine doing that. Like you said, I played shortstop my whole career. I do remember in a game where we went up and played our AAA team in Philadelphia. And I went over to play third base. And I'm not kidding you. I got two balls at third, and both of them, I missed them both. One went off my foot. I think one cranked my ankle. It was so much different and quicker. I was so used to being able to come through the ball and having time. So that's the adjustment period. One of the things a guy like Kingery was going to have to do, or even Zobrist, he could tell you, the amount of work you have to put in is double or triple what everybody else has to do. And that's on you. You have to come in and get your work in. You have to make sure during batting practice you're taking, you know, ground balls at third and second, short, and really moving around. And that can be very taxing in a long season.
There's some really good young hitters in the lineup for the Phillies. I mean, there's plenty of power there with Franco and Hoskins. What do you think are the chances for the Phillies? I mean, a lot of people were picking them to be sort of the surprise team in the NL East. It's all bunched up right now. I mean, it's a pretty competitive division. You know, the Nationals might have been the favorite coming in, but it kind of looks like it's up for grabs. The Braves, too. I know they just got swept by the Giants, but they have a really good young team.
You know, it is. I think the Phillies have opened up some eyes. I don't think they're surprised. I think they're having a really good time and enjoying it. You know, I always thought that this was a team that could try to get to 500, which was a realistic goal. There's always that tough part where you have the, you know, where the team is, where they actually are. Then you have the expectations, and the idea is to try to shrink that gap and see if you can get that team there. And that's Gabe's job. I think they've done a good job at you know, they've beaten the teams that they needed to beat, and they've been competitive against the teams that they probably shouldn't. For example, with the Nationals, although they lost yesterday, couldn't throw strikes, the bullpen kind of let them down. But they competed. I do think the Nationals are missing some guys in that division. When they get everybody healthy, they're gonna make a run for sure. But I think the Phillies are a 500 team. They could, and I think that would be something for the fans would be happy with that. Although I don't know if you could ever make the Philly fans completely happy. but they are a young team. They're fun to watch. They have their handshakes down in the dugout. I mean, these guys enjoy coming out. They do a good job of flushing their losses and enjoying the wins. So I think they're on the right track. I think their pitching staff, the starters are good, but they have to stay healthy, which they're already missing a couple guys in that starting staff. So, you know, down the road, it'll be interesting to see how they do here over the next couple of months when the grind really starts and you get those young guys experience that grind for the first time. Can they withstand that and keep the momentum going?
This is a four-game series, the Giants and the Phillies, and the pitcher that I'm really excited about watching again is Aaron Nola. I actually called one of his games in college when he was at LSU, and I just remember that curveball, and you know, now getting to see him pitch in the major leagues, I mean, it seems like he's really developed well, and he throws that curveball a lot, doesn't he? I mean, even when he's behind the count, he has so much confidence in it.
He does, and that's cool that you got to see him. Isn't that fun when you can watch a guy progress? You got to see him at LSU, and then you'll get to see him again.
Yeah,
he's matured, and you'll see the difference. His curveball is still terrific. He throws all four pitches, any count, where he wants to go. What I really like about Aaron is just the demeanor on the hill, and there just doesn't seem to be anything that rattles him. He's the same guy. I know as a hitter for me, I always like to figure out a way, like I could get on the plate or I could bunt a little bit, do a few things to kind of get the pitcher out of his comfort zone. If I ever saw a pitcher rattled, I always felt in the back of my mind that I had him. And so that as a hitter made me a little bit more confident. I took better swings. A guy like Nola never tips his hat. I mean, this guy, I saw him pitch his second game against the Mets and he didn't have the curveball for a couple innings. So he just went away from it. You know, he just went away from it, did his fastball, a little change up here and there, worked both sides, until he eventually found it. So he is really maturing into a number one for those guys. And I think and you'll see when he pitches, I think he just battles and battles and battles.
We'll continue the conversation with Kevin Stocker right after this. If you're thinking about a fun vacation, how about renting a houseboat on beautiful Shasta Lake? That's right, just go to houseboats.com where they offer houseboat vacations on Shasta Lake. They also rent cabins as well as wakeboard, day cruising, fishing, pontoon, and party boats. Food and beverage service, fueling, brand name clothing, souvenirs, and a grocery store are all available at their modern marinas. Jones Valley Resort and Silverthorne Resort are the premier boating destinations on Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. You mentioned your career. I mean, you came up with the Phillies in 1993, and they go to the World Series that year. Just tell us a little bit about that experience. I know you were telling me about it when we got to know each other a little bit. And, I mean, it was just an amazing season for the Phillies. And, you know, you're joining them and you're a rookie. I mean, that had to be quite a challenge for you to come in there and be the shortstop all of a sudden.
I like how you said it's a challenge. I had to grow up fast, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I was 23 at the time. I grew up fairly fast. But the best thing that happened to me that year in 93 was that they brought me in as an invite into spring training. So I got to know a lot of the guys, their personalities in spring training. One of those things, I remember in spring training, I got, after 2 weeks, I was a young kid. They sent me back down. I'm like, no big deal. But every day that I came in, I had this note in my locker in spring training. I said, hey, they need you to go on the road today with the spring training team on the bus just to be a backup every day. I'm like, okay. And literally one day we go over to St. Petersburg, which is where the Cardinals were, and we're in the middle of the game. And no joke, all of a sudden, I don't know if it was, I think it was Dave Hollins takes off and the brawl starts. We're in spring training and the Philadelphia Phillies, the guys start a brawl with the Cardinals. And everybody goes, and I'm sitting at the bench by myself like, what is happening? This is spring training. Well, it was great that I got to experience that because throughout the year you start to learn how intense those guys were. I mean, they wanted to win. They had no problem. We had a couple of bench clearing brawls during the season. Everybody but me had a mullet, I think, on that team. The personalities were off the chart. But one thing I will tell you is that when the game started between the lines, I haven't played with a more with a team that was that intense, that wanted to win, that was close. The personalities, everybody got along. So it was a really good team to be a part of to learn how to play because there were a lot of veterans. My locker was right next to Darren Dalton. And so he was definitely the leader of our team. And so he took care of me down there with the press, kind of taught me how to deal with him, taught me how to say no comment if I needed to. So it was a lot of fun. We obviously went to the World Series that year and lost, and then I never got close again. So that certainly holds a special place in my heart on that team.
Well, you must have thought, okay, this is the way it is in the major leagues all the time. I mean, it's your first experience, right? And you've got characters on this team. I mean, John Kroc, I mean, what a character he is. And just the whole mix there, it must have been really interesting just walking around that clubhouse.
Well, I'm sure we had a lot of people that would come in just press-wise and just watch, right? I mean, it was an interesting crew. And John was one of those guys that was great. He was super relaxed. And then when the game started, you know, he was really intense. And we even get along great today. But I do remember, you know, a little bit about this team. And this is what I'm talking about, how they wanted to win. I remember getting called up, Joe, on that first day. And my first game was in July against the Dodgers. So I get to the ballpark. I'm in the lineup. My first game goes 20 innings long. So we go 20 innings and win in the bottom of the 20th against the Dodgers. Great game. So we come in after the game, and everybody's high-fiving. It's like 1:30 in the morning. And I go over to my locker, and I'm undressed and taking off everything. And I'm sitting there in my sliding pants, or basically my underwear and a T-shirt. And down, I get this tap on my shoulder, and it's Dennis Mankey, our hitting instructor. And I said, what's up? He goes, hey, in the manager's office right now and bring a bat. And he takes off. And I'm looking at him like, we just won. It's 1:30 in the morning. And I'm like, okay, am I in trouble already? I mean, no joke. So I go into the manager's office. And me, our hitting instructor, Dennis Mankey, Larry Boa, and Jim Fregosi. And we're all in our underwear and T-shirts and flip-flops. And they're in there, and Fregosi and those guys are like, what are you doing at the plate? Because I didn't get a hit that night. I had a couple chances to win it. So they are like, they put the bat in my hands. They're adjusting my stance and doing all this stuff in our flip-flops and underwear at 1:30 in the morning after winning a long game because they wanted to get this goal. They knew what a special team we had, and it started. I mean, there was no time off. Let's go. Let's fix it right now. Came in the next day, had some early batting practice, and took off from there. It gives you a little idea about what that team was about. It was about winning, having a good time and enjoying it, but it was about winning.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Fregosi and Boa, and they are serious, intense people. I mean, that's all I could think about. I mean, I've been around Larry Boa a little bit, and he is all baseball all the time. It must have been quite an interesting mix playing for those guys, just the way they were trying to get the team going.
It was. You know, Jim was a good manager. I liked him because he was quiet, but when he spoke, you know, everybody heard, and he handled the press well. But, yeah, Larry was very intense. Of course, we both played the same position, so I think he was a little bit, when it came to me, he took everything that happened to me personal. So when things went well, it was great. When things went bad, it wasn't so good. But we had John Vukovic on that team. He was our bench coach, and we had a lot of different guys. Irish Mike Ryan was our bench coach at the time, so we'd go out to the West Coast, like into L.A., you could go early at 1 o'clock to the ballpark and you'd find Mike Ryan on the dugout suntanning, you know, at 1 PM in the afternoon. I mean, it was pretty typical. That was that team. And Mitch Williams, of course, player wise was closing. So yeah, a lot of characters on the team. It was a lot of fun. It was fun to win. I think that was the other thing is winning solves a lot of issues when you have, but we just didn't have any cancers really on that team.
You know, what is it about the closer? I mean, right now with the Giants, they've got Hunter Strickland, and I think fans are always holding their breath, you know, with any closer that's not, you know, all that consistent. He's just kind of, you know, feeling his way through it. Mitch Williams, I mean, he had almost as many walks as strikeouts, but he was saving a lot of games. I mean, you guys must have been on the edge of your seat every game that he came in. Wild
stress,
thing, as they called
right?
it. Yeah.
The stress, yeah. You know, Mitch was effectively wild. It seems to me that closers, now everybody throws much harder now than they did even back then, even harder than Mitch. I mean, Mitch wasn't a 97, 98 mile an hour guy, but there was something about him where it was just unusual, hard to pick up. And so, yeah, he was effectively wild. We knew when he came in that we had to be ready. I mean, we had to try to make all the plays because Mitch was not a guy that was going to throw strikes exactly where he wanted to. He wasn't as wild as everybody thought, but you know, closers have a mentality. I still like the fact that teams have true closers. There are some teams out there now that don't quite treat it the same way. And we see that now where starters go five innings, maybe six, and now you have two or three setup guys and then hopefully a closer. But I like that role. I like knowing that we were going to get the same guy every night. So imagine you're a defender, which I played shortstop. I knew if we had that chance to have Mitch come in, I knew what I was going to get. I knew what to expect from Mitch. He could be all over a little bit. I just seem to kind of up my game a little bit defensively. But, you know, trust me, it's one of those things where you have to be thick-skinned and you have to know what you get when your closer comes in.
All right, to finish up, getting back to the 2018 Phillies, who is the guy that you really like watching right now? I mean, on the Phillies that you're kind of enjoying and saying, yeah, this is a guy I'm kind of keeping my eyes on all year.
You know who I really like, and I don't think enough people talk about him with the Phillies, is Cesar Hernandez. And he's the second baseman now, leadoff hitter for the Phillies. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Odubel Herrera is doing great in center. Reese Hoskins is a young stud. I get all that. But Hernandez is so steady at second base, really good defender, super smooth. And I think he's really good in the leadoff spot. He has a little bit of that power. There was so much talk about Scott Kingery in spring training. I think Cesar got forgotten about a little bit. But he's a veteran second baseman. You'll see when he's playing there, he does great turn and double play. He can run a little bit. But offensively, when you watch his swings are always good. His at-bats are competitive. I like him. Now, granted, I'm an ex-infielder, so it's easy to kind of gravitate toward the center guys. But I've been very impressed with Cesar. I'd like to see him run a little bit more, and I think he will as time goes on. He'll start to steal more bases. So out of all the guys in the team right now, he's one of those guys that's really impressed me. And impressed me also is how he's handled during spring training early, you know, a month and a half ago, how he handled the whole situation with the new manager and all the talk about Kingery and switching positions. He's been really good and just played his game. I think you're going to like him when you watch him play.
And I mentioned that you're doing Pac-12 network games. You just got done with the Stanford series. That team's pretty good, aren't they?
Oh, man, I tell you. You know, college baseball, it can be easy to forget. It's a much different game, but Stanford plays more of a professional game. What I mean by that is the hitters are big. They hunt the fastball. They played Utah this weekend, which is where I'm working, in their middle game. They had 25 runs on 26 or 27 hits with four or five home runs. I mean, they're a team right now in college baseball. They're ranked second in the nation. They're real strong and really good. But you know what? It's all about getting to the end of May and into that first week of June, and they'll start narrowing down. You got to be healthy in college baseball. You got to be healthy. You got to have pitching staff, because in college baseball, they still do those tournaments where you can get into the loser's bracket. You've seen it. And if you don't have enough pitching at the college level, you're not going to make it very far. But yeah, they're a professional team right now, for sure, at the college level.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for the time. I really enjoyed working with you on those telecasts. That was a blast. And thanks for setting us up here for the Phillies-Giants series.
Yeah, enjoy the series. Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Joe.
That's former Phillies shortstop Kevin Stocker, who currently serves as a radio analyst for the Phillies and works as an analyst on television for Pac-12 Network and CBS Sports Network. Join us again later on this week. We'll talk to Ray Woodson as the Giants' road trip continues. After Philadelphia, they'll be in Pittsburgh for three games over the weekend. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.